I've been sitting here thinking about all the things you do for me, how you make me feel. Been wondering if it's the same for you, but when you're not around, I lose my mind, 'cause you keep it like a secret. Why won't you?
Hello, Mr. Alstead, are you with us?
Yes, sir, Kevin Young.
All right, let's kick off this show. Exciting. Go ahead, Jeff.
Want to introduce my good friend, Kevin Young. We decided to discuss a little bit of what private trusts are all about, and I was going to introduce the world to kind of give you what his expertise is and kind of what his background is and what brings him here to speak to us today. Kevin, how are you doing today, buddy?
Wonderful, Jeff. Thank you so much. We're really excited to be a part of this community of people listening to all these amazing topics put together by Don and his business all over the world. I want to welcome all of you to this show called In God You Trust. We are thrilled to be talking about a topic that seems to be getting a little more momentum than it did in the past. And I'm going to cover quite a few things in the next few weeks. So every Sunday at this time, which is 5 p.m. Central and 3 p.m. West Coast, and that would be 6 o'clock East Coast. And so for the rest of you who are listening all over this amazing earth, thank you so much for joining us today. And I have never really done a radio show. I do a lot of talking. I got in trouble in school for doing too much talking. So it's kind of natural for me to be able to have an audience and share information and things that I've learned over my lifetime. And so we're going to be focusing on finance, structures, taxation, the legal system, the lawful world, jurisdictions. I mean, the list is pretty long. But today we're going to focus in on trusts and trust law. I have 55 minutes to go through a lot of, I call it formation, not just information. So I'm going to keep it kind of high level. And many of you are going to probably have a lot of questions because this is a topic that gets your mind moving. And let me give a little background just so that you have an idea of who I am, where I've been in my life, and why I am talking about this particular vertical industry of finance. So I was an entrepreneur. Most of my whole life. I'm a disruptor. I guess I've been called that before. I disrupted class and then I disrupted a few other things. And I really didn't know where my path was until I got into the telecommunications industry back in the late 80s. And we were allowed to compete against the big phone companies for the first time because they broke up the monopoly. And it was strictly by accident that I found out that I could get into that industry, and through a friend of mine, started in the pager industry, and then shortly thereafter started a little business up in Seattle called Network Communications, which was an alternative long-distance company. And yes, for those of you who are young out there, we used to have to pay for long-distance phone calls, believe it or not. And I like the phone business because I like people. And telecommunications is a great way to bring us together. And everybody's always communicating. So we have to pay to talk to people, or we used to have to pay to talk to people. And I thought the big phone companies were always jacking people and, gouging people at the phone. And so this concept of prepaid was really the beginning of the shift of how people started looking at paying their utilities. And so that kicked off. And then the segue for that was I got started with the group, and we were the founders of the United States prepaid phone card industry. I know there's a lot of people out there saying, "Oh, are you sure?" Well, yeah, I'm sure. It was a product whose time had come at that time, and to be able to package up time and put it on a piece of plastic and sell it was kind of fascinating, and I cut my teeth on that. So over about 10 years, close to $750 million in revenue, and I had a couple hundred thousand salespeople all over the world, and it was like a whirlwind. So I didn't come from an Ivy League school background. I didn't come from a wealthy family. I just always wanted to be moving around, being successful as much as I could. And, the world is run by money. I hate to say it, but money is a big topic. A lot of people die over money. A lot of people have a great life. A lot of people don't live very well because of lack of money. I didn't know much about money, but I knew that the phone card business was like literally printing money. But before I get into some of those more specifics, I do want to say that some of this information may come across as legal advice. I am not an attorney. I'm not a licensed CPA, any kind of a license, nothing. I'm just a man who represents a private trust, and I share educational materials for people so they can go out and do their own investigation and look into some of this stuff for yourself. So I just want to make sure that there's a disclaimer attached to that. Anyway, my first seven-figure paycheck, I remember I'm like, well, I wrote myself a check. I guess I better hire an accountant so that I can pay my taxes. And I think on that million-dollar check, I paid about $480,000 in taxes. And I'm just like, what is this? So I go out and take all the risk, put my you-know-what on the line, and then the government shows up when I get paid to take half. And that was a stinging moment for me in how I started thinking about, I didn't really know much about the way the world worked in terms of money. So that was my journey. And I'm sure like a lot of you, I mean, I hope so, when you have a lot of questions, you should go get the answers. So I talked to a lot of people. And I used to just say, hey, you're more successful. You're successful. You're, you know, hey, what do you do that I'm not doing? And a lot of these people, I started kind of connecting the dots, and it kept coming back to this word called trust. You know, do you have a trust set up? And I'm like, what's a trust? I thought you had to go set up a corporation to run a business. So it wasn't everybody, but there was a few people that said, you really need to know how the system works in order for you to win at this game, because the game is rigged against you. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, that was about 30 something years ago. And I just continued to learn and read and research and talk to people, because it was fascinating to me that it was really hard for people to make money, and it's really easy to lose it because the system is rigged. Now, is the system terrible? No. So, but if you know how to play in the business world, and you can use your mind, your consciousness, and then, you know, strategically, you have an unbelievable opportunity to discover some things that can give you some kind of an advantage. And I would call it a distinct, you know, advantage that you have, because if you operate correctly, and what I mean by that, when you address money face on and you talk to this topic as somebody who has comprehension of the way the system works, things start to fall in place, and it takes time. Okay. So with that said, I want to make a point. About 95% of Americans, and I don't know the number for everybody else around the world, but about 95% of Americans do not have an estate plan. They don't have anything set up. They just use their name, their personal bank account, and they pay their taxes, and they work, and they grind, but they don't generally have the education, because it's been omitted from our public system, to give them optics to see into a different world. Like, if the world is run by bankers, don't you think you should know how the bankers operate? I would say so. So when you're on this journey to try to figure out how to have an advantage, you know, you need to crack some code so that you have an advantage for yourself and your family. So if 95% of Americans, and let's just say it's probably around the world, are not operating from some kind of a alternative entity as a structure, such as a trust, you're already at a disadvantage. And so that's why I want to help people learn more about this. And by the way, I'm going to make a little plug. I don't want to sell anybody on what we do, but there is more information available at our website at www.ingodyoutrust.org. Not God we trust, but ingodyoutrust.org. There's a quick little 2-minute video, and then there is a deeper dive if you put your name and your email in. I did about a 50-minute podcast about a year ago, and people are liking that. So there's an opportunity for you there. Anyway, so tax. What is tax? Tax is a cost that you have to pay for not knowing who you are, honestly, because everything's a tax. This country was founded on common law. So we talk about 1776. common law is not statutory law. It's natural law, right? It's of nature. And the United States people, the American citizens, were the body politic. And then we would have, you know, small government, and so that we could control that, but still have a discipline that gave us an organized way to do commerce. So what the school books forgot to tell you was that in 1863 and then in 1871, there was a 13th and 14th Amendment that the Congress passed, which was really treason against the people. So the British knew that they could not come in and take over the United States because we loved our freedom and we would fight till the death for it. So they figured out another way to take over. And they did it through banking, and they did it through contracts. And the Civil War that we were all taught was based on emancipating the slaves, right? That's what it was all about, according to our history books. What really happened was they made everybody a slave after the Civil War. And that's not a bad word. In fact, you should, you know, just say it as it is. So in 1871, the United States declared bankruptcy. But you didn't know that, right? If you study bankruptcy law, which I would say would be a great thing to do, you're going to find out how we have been operating as this bankrupt country, which has been shifted into what's called a company since 1871. It's called the Act of 1871. So we as the people were recreated as what's called 14th Amendment citizens under the law of bankruptcy and the law merchant. So you may feel like you're free, but it's called an open air prison because you're owned by a corporation. And when we were bankrupt, the Congress handed over all of the property, which includes us, the gold and the silver, the land, the air, everything, to a company that was called the East India Trading Company, which was a British maritime company located in the Netherlands. And so they brought that company in to become the creditor of the bankruptcy. And guess what they changed the name of that company to? The United States, not the United States of America. The United States, Inc., I-N-C, Incorporated, located in where? The District of Columbia. That is where the United States is. That's it. So what we're doing right now, you guys, ladies and gentlemen, is that we're trying to let you know that we have been through about six or seven generations since then. And that has created a generational curse of ignorance because we're not passed on the truth about our identity of this country and as we the people. So you're now considered on paper, we the persons. And what is a person? A person is not a natural living, a man of flesh and blood. It is a entity. It's a company. It's an organization. It's a trust. It's incorporated. So we go around saying person, 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 but little do you know that the words that you use are entrapping you in these contracts that enslaves your mind so that you can't figure out who you are in this entire game. So they created a contract that was ratified in 1933 under the House Joint Resolution 192, which brought into existence what's called a birth certificate. So they wanted a record of all the newborns that are born in this country, so to speak, company, so that they could collateralize the commodities of human resources. And so we think of the birth certificate as our entry into this life. When we were born, we were really birthed. And the birth, there's a lot of words about this. Again, it's back to maritime law. But the contract that has created this whole situation for you has six parts to it: an offer, an acceptance, awareness, consideration, capacity, and legality. You are converted into a product. So you go from your natural person, mom hands you over through what's called a pledge, and that paper, that pledge paper, becomes a security. Now, here's something that I always found fascinating, and people kept saying this. Kevin, there's no money in our monetary system. I'm like, well, what do you mean there's no money? I had a bunch right here. No, that's not money, Kevin. That's credit. If you read that $1 bill, it says promissory note, right? It's Federal Reserve note. So this whole topic comes back to trust law because the United States Constitution was its first trust. Your birth certificate is a trust. And the irony is that you're actually the beneficiary of a very substantial amount of resources that are being used. You are funding the United States of America through your signature. You're funding it because there is no money. So they had to recreate this concept of an identical country, but it was a company, and it's all based on commercial paper. Commercial paper are contracts or negotiable instruments or promissory notes, such and such and such, right? So that birth certificate is what has gotten you into this situation. And here's the other part. Your name on that birth certificate and on that driver's license and on that credit card is not you. You can't be a name, but you have a name. Your mom and dad gave you a name, but the name was changed. And how was it changed? If it still says the same thing, well, how did they change the name? Well, what they did is they changed it from words to what's called sign language. And a sign language is another anomaly when it comes to communication. Sign language is your name in all capital letters. So in all capital letters means you're civilly dead. So you're walking around saying, no, I'm alive. How can I be a trust? How can I do that? No, because your name in all capital letters, just like on a tombstone, means that you're not a living man of flesh and blood. But they need your autograph on those documents to bring energy into existence. That's why it's called signature, sign of nature. So you have a sign of nature, but that name is what has entrapped you on those contracts. And so all those contracts that you've been autographing and signing throughout your life are all because of the original security instrument called a birth certificate, and everything downstream from there is what's called an adhesion contract, which is kind of like sticky, meaning that this one is that one and that one and that one. That's all their property. And I say there as in the company, right? The United States Inc. owns your name, owns the birth certificate, owns your social security card, owns your driver's license, owns your bank account. Whether you think it is yours or not, it's not until you go back and correct it or have an alternative to that system. And I'm not saying it's terrible, it's bad, but you just haven't been told the truth, right? So now we've got that kind of behind us. Let's talk a little bit about where we are, because when I learned about trust at the beginning, and I started thinking, I'm going, you know what? Everything is about trust. Like everything is a trust. Even going into a grocery store is a trust. Getting married is a trust. Dollar bill in your pocket is a trust. Your birth certificate is a trust. So it's a very misconstrued topic, but from a intelligent perspective, you want to know how these entities operate so that you can, again, navigate it. Copy what wealthy people do if you want to make more money. Don't copy those people that don't. I mean, it's pretty simple. But there are a lot of wealthy people who still don't know what private trusts are, but they have been able to figure out the game on the public side. And then what they do is they surround themselves with attorneys and CPAs and financial advisors so that that team keeps them out of trouble. Because you're always just one situation away from trouble, right? So I kind of look at it as we're in an unconventional war, okay? And it's really the company versus the people. And if they can keep you unaware of who you truly are as a natural individual, then they're winning the war. And it's all this other stuff that you're watching. I don't have TV. I haven't had TV since 2008. All the other stuff that you're seeing and watching and all the crazy stuff is all a distraction to keep you away from you. Because if you found out who you really truly are and how you were recreated in this system, if everybody found out about this and did something about it, the whole world would change like overnight. But it's done like cooking a frog. Every little thing just slowly tips up. And eventually you just get cooked. And then as you get through your generational curse, which means you're just copying what your mom and dad did. You're copying what your grandpa did. You're copying what that grandpa did and grandma. And then the public school system in this country is corporations, right? It's a company that wants to educate its products, which is the subjects, on how to think so that you have no protocol into the other world. You're just going to continue to go down that generational curse. If you think about it, a public school is a government school. So the government is a company and it's banking. It's all about commerce. And so they don't want you to know their game. So I kind of had a conversation with God literally one night. I said, what am I supposed to do now? Why don't I just use this, you know, this formation and this knowledge that I've gained over the years and help other people? And it's working. It does work. It's a different life when you are not in trouble or being who you're not. That's the bottom line. So if you go out and get in a car accident today, you know, that's not your car, by the way, because you bought tabs, and those tabs and that plate handed the car back to the state that you got that car in, or which you, where you registered it. You're also using a driver's license. That's not yours. The state issued it, right? So it's their property. And you have a social security number, and people always say, well, yeah, my social security number. It's not your social security number. It's theirs. So when you get in a car accident, the only thing that you own out of that situation is the liability. And when you know what liability means, like literally down to the core, you want to steer clear from it. Okay, but you're always one car accident away from getting, quote, yourself into trouble, because lawsuits happen, right? All kinds of different things happen to get you into the public system or the court system or the charge you system, you know, the municipalities. All these other things are all franchises of the United States Corporation, all of them. You think that little town you live in is actually a government? No, it's a franchise of the United States Corporation. So when you get a little bit more conscientious of this, you start looking, you're saying, well, wait a minute, this is like the public trust versus the private trust. And when you see that duality and you start to pierce the veil of this lie, this big lie, you will start to unpack what has been packed inside of you for all those years. And you're going to start questioning yourself, like, is this, should I know this? How come I don't know about this? How come my attorney doesn't talk? How come people don't talk? Why is it so weird? It's not. It's just that it's been kept a secret because you're not supposed to know this stuff. So anyway, let's talk a little bit specifics as it relates to how easy this is. Okay. When you go through this process, and again, I would say, go back to that website in godyoutrust.org, listen to that other video I did. I think some stuff will come, you know, the light bulb will turn on. So there are two different jurisdictions that we're operating in. One is called statutory, which is statutes and codes, which is maritime law, administrative law. You know, it's all about merchant. It's commerce. And then there is the law, which is natural law from God, right? Equity. So there's God, there's the law of equity, the law of nature, and then there's common law. And then there is administrative law, and then there is maritime law, which is, goes all the way back to Rome, right? Rome never fell. It just split up and went in lots of little pieces all over the place. And it was based on the same principles of controlling the people through money. So you don't want to have to be a people, so to speak, or a person. You can essentially re-identify yourself and create an alternative entity that did not come from the corporation called the trust. And it's called private because private means of nature. So you, your body, which comes from nature and from your parents and from, you know, the miracle of life, comes from the earth. And your mind is intellectual property, which means that you have the freedom to think for yourself. And your spirit is what keeps you, you know, in a direction that, you know, you call it ethics or love or whatever that may be for you. They wanted to capture all of that so that you really don't exist. So you can say, well, wait a minute, I'm finding out about this private trust. As the natural man or woman, you have the right under the First Amendment of the Constitution under the common law to express a contract into existence without the assistance of a country, or excuse me, of a company. So you're expressing a trust, meaning I'm going to set this up. I don't need to go to the state of California and ask for permission to use one of their, you know, entities like an LLC or a C Corp. You can actually do this yourself as a, what's called a grantor. And so you're granting and expressing a trust into existence on your own free will and your own volition so that you can start operating under God's law, which is superior over man. Did man invent you? No. Did man create God's law? No. So, and God can be whatever you want it to be, but it's a, it is a natural law. So when you express a trust and you start, you know, onboarding this information, you're creating a contract. And if it's irrevocable, which is another term that you'll hear, that means that the corpus of the trust, which is the body, the law of the trust, you're setting up your own government. Okay. And you are self-administering your own government, which is called self-governing. When you find out that these people, these elite type people that are running this show, look down on humanity, because according to them, we're not smart enough to govern ourselves. We need to be governed. They really do have a disdain for your freedom. And I'm telling you that's for the fact. So, okay, well, how do you win pushback against that? Play their game, right? Disrupt their game. Start learning about our current monetary system, because we're not operating in a lawful money system. There is no gold or silver. It's all based on your labor and the time that you put in. That's what you're called, human resources or human capital. So by setting up this trust, you can be the grantor, or you could have somebody else be the grantor. And it's also another term is called settler. So the trust doesn't really have any value unless it is built with assets. Okay, so you're the first asset. You want to get that body of yours out of their hands, and we can show you how to actually take back your body and your intellectual property and move it into a trust as the trust property, no longer the corporation property. So you're going to start self-governing. By the way, hey, it's a lot of people don't like to be self-governed. They like to be told what to do. I just personally don't, and I know a lot of people that I associate with don't like to be. And we can all live and love each other just fine without some big government telling us what to do every single day. So if you set up your own natural government that you can administer, you're going to appoint yourself as a trustee. So what is a trustee? Well, a trustee is like a CEO of a company. A trustee is somebody that has responsibility. And in the capacity in the commercial world, it means you're a fiduciary. So as a fiduciary, you have to be responsible for the estate as your life. So while you're living, that's called the life trust, right? You're living, but it's really not for your benefit per se. It's for the future benefit of what's called the beneficiary. Okay. So there's really three parts to a trust: the grantor, which is the creator. And then there's the trustee, which is the administrator. And then down the road, there is what's called a beneficiary, somebody who's actually going to benefit from you, what you did as the manager of the estate while you were here, right? Do you have to be wealthy to have a trust? Heck no. I mean, that's completely not even true whatsoever. But you're moving, when you start operating like this, you're moving away from the me, it's all about me, to it's all about what I'm doing for them down the future. So it's a mindset as much as it is just language about this, right? About the different positions within a trust. So when the trust is established, you're going to want to move assets. Like, let's say you have a house. Let's say you have money in an account. Say you have cryptocurrency. You have gold or silver. You have horses. You have a barn. You have land. You have gold and silver. Those are assets. Okay. So there's a process to merge, to moving these assets to the trust, to grants, deeds, pledges, gifts, selling. So the trust is really kind of a clone of you, but in a different higher jurisdiction that's operating free of the statutory system. And when you're free of operating in the statutory system, do you think you're going to have some more freedom? Absolutely. There's 6,700,000 laws on the statutory books right now that you can violate at any time. 6,700,000 statutes and codes. I mean, get your head wrapped around that. Like, they're writing 100,000 new laws like every 3 months. It's insanity, because the more they can put your subject into a situation where they're going to violate it, they're going to get you to autograph some of their papers so that you can bring some of that credit back into existence and create the circulation of currency, because you are the circulator. Currency is based on electricity. The sea is water, right? So when you're creating current, you're creating energy, and you're stirring up the electricity and all those photons and neutrons and protons and everything else. You are the one that is giving energy to this monetary system, which is called credit. So you can do all the same things, but from a different house called a private trust. It's really that simple. So when you're now starting to transfer all of those assets, do you now own any of those things anymore? No, this is another trap. Hey, I own that car. I own this house. I'm a homeowner. I own this. I own that. I own that. No, you don't. The government owns all of your stuff because it's not yours. Your name is not your name, and your autograph is for them. So it's hard to get your head wrapped around that, because we've been taught since we were little kids, you're going to want to grow up one day and, you know, get some money and start owning things so that you have a comfortable life, like a house and a car and what have you. But the term that has enslaved us is owner, to own something. And then when you say ownership, what do you think that means? You're on the ownership without a rudder, lost at sea. So as you kind of get in this, if you want to, start, you know, exploring this industry or this topic, you start to see what is maritime law. It's all about the ship. So the Romans and then the British, you know, all these societies way before us, it was all about trade, but that ship is cargo, has cargo in the bottom, and it has a manifest. Well, you are the cargo, and that birth certificate was the manifest, and you had a weight that made you as good as gold, because it is backed by gold. Your body is actually backed by gold. So this trust is over here. It's kind of like an alternate you, and you get to name it, right? So you have a name, but you're not the name, but you can give the trust a name. So you can call it XYZ Legacy Trust, or, you know, the Citizens of the World Trust, or whatever you want to do. And then you're thinking, okay, well, what do I do with this money thing? How do I do that? Well, you don't want to make any more money. If you make money, it's not yours. So you can give it all away. You can still go out and use your skills and your mind and your labor and your time to create value so that you can get that, quote, currency and direct it into the trust account, which would be called a trust fund. So this is a common word that I try to help people with, which is called a species of money. Okay, so species, like a bird, there's eagles, there's hummingbirds. Money has different species. So there's legal money or legal tender, and then there's lawful money. So the money that you're making that comes from the Federal Reserve, which is printing this money, is all credit. That's why it says promise. That's why it says Federal Reserve note. So you're just passing the buck. So there is a way for you to actually change that species of money to lawful money. But the simple rule of setting up your signature card for the trust at the bank, and that will have what's called a disposition, meaning that that species of money now moves into the lawful domain, which is common law, which is real money backed by gold and silver. It's how they actually, when they enter all these digits and things in the bank that you can't see because they have the screen, that's all credit, right? But when you put that particular species of money into the bank as lawful money, it changes hands, literally. So the trust itself can produce or can operate in the commercial world. So does that mean you don't have any more money? No, that just means that the trust does, and you're now the living man or woman. So the trust has to give you the right to have access to its resources. And so that's what's called a, it's not, you're not going to make a salary. You wouldn't make your income. You don't have to report anything. A private trust like this does not have to file taxes. Ooh, wow. People all of a sudden get scared. Like, well, am I going to go to jail? No, you're in jail. Simple. Okay. You're in the monetary system and you're already in jail. We're trying to show you how to get out of being in trouble. So because the Federal Reserve and the banker establishment doesn't own this trust, it doesn't have the same, it's not subject to the statutes and codes of a filer. And by the way, taxes are all volunteer anyway. You probably never read the fine print like I didn't. All fine print matters. All of it. It's all there. So just like when you had your first job, whether you were 18 or 19 or whatever, you know, you filed your first taxes, you elected through a contract to be a taxpayer. And then you get the term taxpayer, right? Debtor, person, all these banker terms. So you can unelect yourself from being a taxpayer if you wish. And there's a process and a protocol and paperwork to do that. And we help people do that too. But you have to realize that you can still give away your income if you have a job. You can donate your income, your paycheck to the trust. And you are, as of the legal system this year in 2024, you can deduct 60% of any income that you give away on your, quote, taxes if you are filing as taxpayer. So 60% more lemon juice you're going to get out of that paycheck. So if you have a job, you're working for somebody else, and you have a trust over here, all you do is you go back to your employer and you say, hey, I think I'm a big boy now. I don't particularly want to have you withhold any more taxes. And they have to legally stop doing that. And there's actually IRS forms that you can give them if you need to enforce that. So most likely they're still going to withhold your Social Security or maybe some of the benefits that you're paying for. But you can now get the full paycheck. They turn right around and you go, ooh, I don't want this. And then you go donate it to the trust. And now how do you have access to the money? Well, you're the trustee. So the trustee then can have an allowance, which means that he or she is allowed to use the capital resources of the trust to pay for what? Your expenses, clothing, gasoline, diesel, you know, food for your dog, your kids' braces, the mortgage. Oh, you have a house. Okay, well, if you have a mortgage on it, who's going to make the mortgage payment if you don't have any more money? The trust. The trust needs to make sure that you're living in a comfortable home. So trust property becomes something that you can use and have as an advantage and as a benefit versus saying, I don't own anything anymore, because you don't. People say, well, what do you have? I don't have nothing. Why would I want anything? I support this organization over here called a trust, and it takes care of me. I'm just living just fine. And I just keep it private because that's what it is. It's a private trust. So you can avoid taxes, not evade. Let's not put you in a situation that could get you in trouble. You can legally avoid taxes by donating your income to a private trust, period. It's that simple. And, you know, it's a hard pill to swallow for some people, but it's the truth. I mean, you could give all your money away to a 501c3. You could give it to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. I personally wouldn't do that, but you can give it to whoever you want to. Why not just give it to the trust that you can control? So a private natural trust is a red pill moment for you to look at life and business in a different way, but it still gives you the opportunity to exist in the system and have an easier life. I mean, life is tough. There's a lot of risks that we take every single day just to try to get ahead. And it's harder and harder for people to get ahead, especially in our current economic system, because they know how to dial down the value of your dollar bill easily just by printing more of it. So cost of goods didn't go up. They actually are about the same, but the value of your dollar went way down. So everything appears to cost more money because you have to use those same credits, so to speak, to pay more of those to get the same items, milk or gasoline. This concept of inflation and recession, all that, they do this about every 10 or 15 years. This is a big one coming. So I'm trying to ring the bell and saying, get your house in order. Get a an alternative entity set up that is out of the paws, separate yourself as much as possible from this public system. Because when it hits and you don't, and you're not prepared, well, guess what? What are you going to do? I mean, why do people wait till they're almost dead to set up a trust or set up an estate? I mean, I don't get it, because, well, we're not taught to. That's just the way it is. So we're copycatters. When you start thinking, you know, independently of the hive mind, which is the sheeple out there, which, again, no offense, you know, I've been a sheeple. But when you kind of start cracking open the door and you start realizing there's a whole other world out there, like 10 other worlds, maybe 1,000 other worlds. But you have to give yourself permission to do something different than you're already doing if you keep getting the same result, period. And, you know, this is a tool. A trust is a tool. It's not a silver bullet by any means for everything, but it is a substantial tool that you can have to give yourself, less risk, more money to access. You don't have a tax season any bit more. You don't own anything anymore, so there's no liability. You can be sued, but they won't get anything because you don't have anything. I mean, I would want everybody to have the virtues of this so bad, but a lot of times people want to argue with me about me trying to set them free. Isn't that crazy? And I know some of you listening in probably have had some of those same experiences. Like, people just don't want to hear, right? It's like their brains has been turned off. Well, it has, because they watch TV every day. You know, and the TV is not your friend. Or you watch the news, right? Or you're participating as a co-conspirator this entire system by not knowing anything else other than what you were taught. So a trust is a gateway to the other part of the world, which has been kept from most all of us by design. As of 2024, the government just came out with some more things for you to have to follow if you are operating from a corporation, like an LLC or an S-Corp or a C-Corp or even a 501c3. And again, I would suggest go research this stuff on your own, but it's called the Corporate Transparency Act, and it was in effect as of January 2024. So if you have set up a company with the intent to have more privacy, that's out the door. If you set up a company so that you could have, you know, some deductions with your taxes, that's kind of really pretty much out the door. So what are companies used for now? Well, see, if you don't follow these new Corporate Transparency Act compliances, well, they can fine you up to $500 a day for the company. They can induce up to $10,000 in penalties. They can charge you criminally if they think that you're laundering money. And trust me, they can create situations for you to think that you're laundering money. And so you have to do all this new reporting, and it's just gotten harder and harder using one of their franchises to actually have a privacy, and that's gone. So be very aware of if you're in business. Now, can a trust operate like a business? Absolutely. You know, that's a whole other conversation. But you are not going to be subject to the same statutes. You're not going to have to report to, you know, Big Brother everything that you're doing, and it's just a much easier way of life. So, you know, again, that's a vertical. When you start thinking about it, what are the different applications that you could have for, you know, the use of a private trust? The basics is just for yourself and your family is to get yourself separated from that public system where you have to deal with those $6,700,000 traps. All right. Another little interesting topic is, you know, people who are in real estate. Well, I love real estate. I mean, you only make so much of it, right? I've owned a lot of it. I've sold a lot of it. I've lost a lot of it. But you can truly make wealth through real estate. And a lot of people that don't know about private trusts, when they find out that they could have these properties in their own little trust, we call them single asset trusts. So you can deed, sell, convey those properties into a trust that is inside of a trust. And when you go to sell that property, it's going to avoid the capital gains and excise taxes. So if you had let's say you had a $1.2 million year in your real estate endeavors, if any of those assets were not in a private trust, they would be subject to those taxes. So a $1.2 million net income would result in about a $444,000 taxable event. And notice the government only shows up when you go to sell the properties, right? Well, yeah, because they took all the risks. No, they didn't. You did. So if it was in a trust, then that money would go directly into the trust account and it would be sheltered. Okay. it avoids it by sheltering it and deferring it. So now you have $444,000 more dollars as credit inside of that trust account to go do what? Invest more dollars, right? You start learning how money makes money and credit makes credit, and you can do it without the hands of the tax man involved in your life. You have a much more liquid opportunity in your future to actually gain capital. That's why it's called capital gain, right? The system actually wants to reward you for being a bigger contributor to the economy than just an individual. That's why individuals are taxed the most. So again, you're playing the banker game. If you are the banker, okay, you need to know that you are right now a private banker, but you probably haven't been handed the keys to this information yet. So you're still sitting on the sidelines looking in, listening to me. You know, I think I've been talking solid now for about 45 minutes. And I could talk about this for days and days and days. But as you can tell, I love this information because all of us, I want all of you all over this world to live free and to be, to love your life and to love your future, to be healthy and not fall in these traps where we have to live in misery for somebody else's gain. That's just me. But anyway, as you get a little more advanced, some of you may have, you know, more wealth or whatever, you can start creating what's called private trust networks, which is another term for it is called a constellation trust. So you would have, for example, a primary trust at the top, and then you would drop individual trust down below that because a trust can grant a new trust into existence. So it's kind of like an oak tree is your master trust, and then the branches off that oak tree are subsequent trusts. So you could have a trust for an airplane, you can have a trust for an RV, you could have a trust for a second home, you could have a trust for your life insurance. And so what you're doing is you're distancing yourself even more from the long arm of those who want to pry into your life. Because they can, and they do. They know everything about you. So there are some really cool things that we can do to help people structure these. You know, it's kind of like you're literally just in the disappearing acting business. That's what you're doing. You're disappearing off the radar so that you can live in private and generate some tremendous rewards for yourself while you're on this journey of life and giving it all over to your offspring, your children. Maybe you give it to an endowment, people that you love, or whatever. It's up to you because you get to govern your own self. All right.
Hey, kiddo.
Let me stop first. Yeah, go ahead, Jeff. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you, brother. You did such an amazing job, and I'm sure the folks that are at home listening or in their car listening have so many questions, right? And it's this conversation elicits so many questions, particularly because of the state of the world we live in, right? And you did such a masterful job. But I'm thinking just as a person driving or, you know, at home listening, just like, because you just mentioned about, you know, passing this on to your heirs, right? So mm-hmm. Could you explain in layman's terms and simplified terms of how does someone's heirs take over upon someone's death, or they're the successor of that private trust?
Well, you know what? I apologize because I was just hoarding the show here, and I do apologize. That's a great question. Please always chime in on me, Jeff. Otherwise, you know me, I'll just run off on the mouth. But so
you're fine, brother.
Okay. So a lot of us, like I said, 95% of Americans don't have an estate plan, which means that it's going to go into probate when you pass away or if you get disabled or. And probate is essentially where all of your assets and your stuff and things has to go into court. Okay. So the court will decide who gets dispersed this or that or what have you. And a will, if you set up a will, for example, through an attorney, that will is a directive for the judge. That's not for your family. That's for the judge to decide and how to disperse it, which is good to have a will. You know, very few people have wills either. So the trust, because it was set up by you, what you can do is you can appoint, let's say your kids, as long as they're 18, you can make them to become what's called a successor trustee. So a successor trustee is, think of it as like a quarterback who, you know, you got two quarterbacks. One is playing the game. If he comes off the game, the other quarterback can go in and the game goes on. So the beneficiary would mean that the trust is collapsed. And you really don't ever want to collapse these things, honestly, if you can keep them rolling over the years. That's what generational wealth is all about. But right. You would appoint let's say your son, if he's the first to be the successor trustee. So if you passed on, it would already be in the bylaws of the trust. And then his name would also be recorded with the bank. So he would take over the fiduciary responsibility of the bank. But you're passing that trust on just literally without any intervention from the government whatsoever. Now, son one takes over and now he's running the trust as if nothing ever changed and the game goes down the road. Okay. So can you have more than one successor trustee? Absolutely. You can have one, you could have two, you could have three. And usually when we're setting these up for people, you would also appoint those successor trustees as beneficiaries. So there's a lot of good information that comes on the heels of that, Jeff, because you're planning, your life planning and your estate planning, and you're planning for your offspring and your heirs to take on what you've left behind without a hiccup and without tax. Probate is hell. I mean, I talk to people all the time that go, hey, my dad just died. Can I set up that trust? No, you missed it. You didn't do it in time. So yeah, you want to learn how this trust continues to be passed downstream to your generations, and they'll thank you for doing it.
Right. What are the questions? So just for the sake of time, Kev, we had about four more minutes or so. If you could summarize, you know, take the top five benefits of someone having a private trust. I mean, you've obviously listed some along the way, but what would you say your top five would be if you could, you know, if you could condense it to five of the benefits?
That's a good question. I could give you more than five, but let's just start off with you eliminate most all liability. Your life is full of liability right now because that person that you think you are is not even you. And so you are subject to the system at any time. So removing the liability and having to look over your shoulder, as far as I'm concerned, is probably one of the biggest, like, you just get a breath of fresh air, right?
Sure.
I don't know. I think paying less taxes seems to be always a good thing. Why do you pay taxes? Because you think you have to? No, you need to learn about tax law, trust law.
Right.
So that tax is a fee for you using their private property, which are Federal Reserve notes. So taxes, being able to hold back with and shelter and defer taxes is, you could swap that out with what I just said on the first one. The fact that you have an estate plan that you can pass on to your family without any intervention from a corporate government. I mean, why? Are you kidding me? Sure. The fact that a trust can also accept donations. So because it is ecclesiastical in some regards, meaning that it does come from God, is that you can operate this trust in the capacity as a ministry. It doesn't mean you have to be Christian, but a ministry means that you are administering your beliefs through God to your family, and more than one or two is a gathering. So you're administering, that's what the administration is called at the federal government, right? The administration, they're ministering the business. It's exactly what it is. So you're free of all of those statutes and codes by being, so you can accept those donations, right? So somebody wants to write this trust I'm operating a $60,000 check at the end of the year, I'll give them a receipt if they're going to go file taxes. Yeah, I can do that. The fact that
where could Kev, just for the sake of time, I wasn't trying to interrupt you.
Oh, please do.
Where could folks reach you? I know you've given the website out before, but could you give that to us one more time?
Yeah. So go to www, just type in a browser, ingodyoutrust.org. There's a phone number there. And what happens if you want to talk to me directly, you have to drop your name and your email in, then watch that 50-minute video. Not very good video, by the way. I didn't like it, but the information is, I think, well presented. And then you can use, I have a Calendly event, so you can just set up a time that makes the most sense to you. And Jeff and I have a team of people, we can, you know, go through your questions and answers and see if what we do is a good opportunity for you and a good solution. And I hope everybody finds something out of this presentation today or this radio show that gives you a little hope, maybe a little bit more hope than you had before. And that the promise of the future can be an awesome force if you have hope in your heart. So Any other questions, Jeff? I think we're right there about the time that
we're I think we're good. And I think we'll just circle back, next Sunday, 5 Central, 3 o'clock Eastern, Pacific, rather, next yes. Sunday.
And we got and a lot
we got
more
a lot
topics.
Of topics to discuss.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
We do. Okay. Well, hey, I just want to say thank you, everybody. It's my first radio show. I hope it was fun and a good experience and that you learned something and that I got a chance to. And with Jeff and Don and this great organization that I'm a part of here, we just we love all of you and thank you for your time today. We'll look forward to seeing you next Sunday at the same time.
You did great, brother.
Peace and love, everybody.
Bye-bye.